This is the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, even when he probably doesn't want to be, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hi. How was your Monday night?
It was fine. I got to the gym. I had a healthy dinner. I exercised some demons. Oh, and I watched my soul being crushed on national television.
Yeah. I luckily, I'm kind of, there's a team retreat for my new job. And so I was spared most of the first half, and I kind of, you know, watched between my fingers for the second half. And, I can understand where everybody is, where they are. The best tweet I got was, I think that we both got, was like, I'm just going to go get some ice cream. And then it was like, I threw it on the floor. That was probably the best tweet.
All right. Before we get into the rest of your calls and go into diagnosing and dissecting the disaster that was Monday night's loss to the Arizona Cardinals, one quick programming note. If you are a fan of the Jets still for some reason, or the Mets, the Giants, the Knicks, Rangers, or Islanders, and you want to listen to all of our original podcasts all in one place so you don't have to subscribe to 17 different shows and clog up your feeds, you can find everything in the SNY.TV audio network. Just subscribe on the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. If you want to just listen to this show week by week and get all the great Jets audio content from SNY, search SNY.TV Jets, hit subscribe, and you'll be all set there. And of course, as always, please make sure you rate and review SNY.TV Audio Network and SNY.TV Jets to give us a little bump and give our show a little bit more publicity. And with that being said, let's get rolling.
Charles from Jersey. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Bleep, 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 bleep.
George Reister, Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Unbelievable. No energy at all. All phases. Lackadaisical performance. Terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. The curse of Walt Michaels. They never should have fired him in 81.
Well,
Did you get a lot of hype energy out of those guys? They seem pretty pumped up.
Oh man.
No? Am I reading that wrong? Am I reading it wrong?
Yeah, this is bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. They just laid there. I mean, oh, so bad.
It was like watching, I don't have a pet. So I've never had a pet, so I don't know if this is accurate for people who have had pets or currently have pets. But I imagine it's like watching your dog be rolled over by like one of those steamrollers that rolls like 4 miles an hour, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And it's, you're just watching the thing that you love die in front of you. And you probably could have done something to save it if your dad had listened to you, but your dad just had this blank stare, and then he decided to punt on fourth down for some reason, and you were just like, but the dog is dying.
Now we'll just punt. It's fine. It's fine.
Look, there was nothing good about last night. Nothing. There was nothing good. There's nothing good about this season except for the fact that they embarrassed the Bills, but now the Bills are a fringe playoff team. I hate everything.
That loss for the Bills spurred them to 4 wins straight. Like, that woke them up, right? They're like, we lost to this team?
Here's the thing. I don't even know where to get started is the frustrating part, right? Like,
yes,
there's so many things to criticize. There's the Fitzpatrick and Geno thing, which we will definitely get into in a little bit. There's Casey Rogers' insistence on playing Sheldon Richardson out of position and his obvious
Buster Screen out of position. Why don't you put Buster Screen back in the spot? Put him back in the slot, for God's sake. I don't need this. Great. He's a boundary corner. He's paid like a boundary corner. Play him in the slot. He's better there. Yeah, why?
I agree. And by the way, it should be pointed out that the last time a team played Buster Screen on the outside primarily, he led the league in pass interference calls, and the Jets ended up beating him.
That sounds familiar. Does that sound familiar?
It sounds familiar. It's just, look, there are a lot of problems here. I don't think the answer is to fire the coaching staff. I don't think the answer is to fire the GM. As I tweeted out, earlier Monday morning, depending on when you're listening to this. If you look at the last 10 years of Jets draft history, it's bordering on apocalyptic. I mean, it is so bad. The 2012 and 2014 drafts are just, oh my God, historically brutal. And look, it's extremely early to have this conversation, but the 2015 draft isn't shaping up that great. Bryce Petty, not good. Jarvis Harrison, already cut. Devin Smith, hurt. Right. Lorenzo
Forever Bolden, hurt. Forever Lorenzo, hurt.
Well, we'll get that. I'm higher on Devin Smith than you are, I think. Lorenzo Maldon can't stay healthy. Or Lorenzo Maldon put on weight, is getting tossed around like a rag doll after having a surprising rookie season or an encouraging rookie season. And then it's Leonard Williams who fell into your lap at six, and Deion Simon can't get on the field for Steve McClendon. So it's a wide-ranging issue, and I think it's better if we dial down and drill down and focus on some specific tasks. So let's move on to our next specific task.
This is Gina from Jersey City. I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick is what his record says he is, 159 touchdowns and 126 interceptions, a career journeyman.
It was the worst thing I've seen in a long time. Ryan Fitzpatrick deserves an award for the highway robbery that he pulled off for $12 million for Pop Warner quarterback.
So this is T from Manhattan. Does Fitzpatrick pick up his check with a ski mask on? Because he's robbing the Jets right now. He's garbage. Season's over.
Oh, man. Oh, you guys are hilarious this week. You guys are legitimately, like, you're making this all better.
You got to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Oh, that's or all you just right? laugh until you cry, and then it just all blends into one emotion. I think that you've talked about this, and you've talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick going on tilt, and when he's on tilt, it's unbearable and it's hard to watch. Last night he had so many opportunities to make plays, and he ran out of pockets that were clean. There were some that were not clean that he bailed on, that he had to bail on. There was obviously issues with the offensive line, with the penalties putting them in tough spots, particularly the false start. But then freaking quarter. I mean, does a quarterback getting offsides in shotgun, Brian? How does that happen?
I don't know. It's one of those, like, only the Jets can commit a penalty like this, right? I mean, that's all you can say, right? I don't even know what to think about it.
Do you think that any of Ryan Fitzpatrick's problems are not fixable, but do you think there will at all come like this season where we see someone close to the player that we saw last season?
I don't know. I don't think so. And based on the evidence of as many games as we've had so far, no, because it's just not there, right? And you go back to the offseason, you go back to Ron Jaworski and his kind of film room analysis of Ryan Fitzpatrick, saying he got awfully lucky, in terms of the amount of interceptions that could have been that weren't, and, you know, kind of Brandon Marshall playing kind of outside his skin a little bit. I mean, no disrespect to Brandon Marshall, but, you know, he had Eric Decker around for much of the season. He doesn't have it. They're trying. He's pressing. There's no one to really help him. And Nunez, you know, starting to shrink back a little bit. You know, the ball is getting distributed a little bit more to other players, but, you know, still, it's just right. There's no answers. There's no solutions.
But Nunez was open on two different plays last night, and Ryan Fitzpatrick missed him both times. There was a play last week, if you look at the All-22 tape, where Nunez was wide open for like a 40-yard gain over the middle, and instead he forces it to Marshall.
Checked in.
It's like the only thing the guy sees right now are screen passes and Brandon Marshall. Yeah, he kind of distributed it a little bit in the second half to other players, but it's just like there are guys that are open, and when he's even has the chance, he's missing them. But the thing that infuriates me the most about all of this is that Todd Bowles' reasoning for the benching wasn't that Ryan Fitzpatrick played like absolute crap for the fifth time in the last six games. It was that, well, we wanted to get Geno Smith some reps, and he isn't getting any reps in practice. And it wasn't and Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to remain the starter for next week. I just don't know what Ryan Fitzpatrick has to do to get Todd Bowles to bench him, or more accurately, to get Mike Maccagnan and Woody Johnson to bench him.
Well, it just seems like for Todd Bowles, who seems to be a tell it like it is. I mean, not a tell it like it is, but, you know, kind of you see what you get kind of coach, to kind of run these parallel tracks of what he's doing versus what he's saying. It just seems counterproductive, and it just seems counter to his nature. And just tell us you benched him because, right, he was having a bad night and you just couldn't bear to watch it anymore. I have to think Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to have a short leash coming up against the Ravens, who I guess are going to be without Terrell Suggs, so maybe that's good for the Jets. But, you know, nothing – I don't see that anything's going to get solved this year. And right now they're getting – I mean, and hey, they just played five playoff teams from – you know, in their past six games from last year. And, you know, I think I saw it on Roto-World this morning, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best, right? And they've not beat any of the better teams in the league. But now they get their cupcake part of the schedule – and so what? So now that what puts you into the mediocrity land? So what are we doing with this season at this point? What are we doing? I don't know.
That's a fair point. All right, let's move on to our next question.
This is John Zale, Westbury, New York. This game is getting old. Same Jets. They play. They run the same exact plays every single week. And the other teams are watching the films. So they know the plays as soon as they're going to happen. It's terrible.
The best part about this, that comment, and it's so well said, the best part about this was that John Gruden said the Cardinals told us in film study and by watching this tape and by watching this team that Ryan Fitzpatrick, when he's under any sort of pressure at all, is basically just going to lock on the one receiver and look at him for most of the game. And then he did. And then he did. Just like he did last week, just like he did the week before, just like he did in Buffalo in week 17. This is what he does. And the fact that he's not being held accountable, and the fact that Brandon Marshall is being trotted out to say, and I don't think anyone's forcing him to say this, I think he thinks this, but for Brandon Marshall to sit there and say, it's my fault. Like, if not for Brandon Marshall, Ryan Fitzpatrick wouldn't have a career. It's
absolutely
not your fault, Brandon. It's not your fault.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you, Goodwill Hunting. I'm with you. And that's the thing that kind of worries me the most about this is all the credit in the world to Brandon Marshall and being a stand-up guy. And you think about where his career was 10 years ago and, you know, credit to him in you know, maturing and, you know, probably what he – just think about what he would have done in the same situation 10 years ago to what he's doing today. So all the credit in the world to him there. But like, I kind of have this feeling you're talking about the steamroller and the dog or whatever. Like, I just have this feeling of like, is this season going to make him blow? Right. Is he going? Cause right now he's being a mensch. He's being an uber mensch. And I just hope he can keep it rolling through the rest of the season. And then they can figure something out at the quarterback position between now and next year, because he's doing a great job being a stand-up guy, but you know, it's not on him, as you say.
This is definitely the type of season where all of a sudden, in the wreck seasons have passed, this is 2012. Mm-hmm. This is the season where the knives came out in the media. This is the one where the sources and the agents and all the back talk really, really started to come after Rex. And you're already seeing it in a certain Daily News columnist piece today was going after the coaching and not Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Shocking.
For last night. That said, two things on coaching, one of which revolving around Geno, one of which revolving around the play calling. Would you rather start with play calling or would you rather start with Geno?
Let's start with Geno.
Okay, so you finally go to Geno in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes left. You're down 3+ scores. The game is over. This season is over. There's no hope left, okay? You are literally just going to him to, quote-unquote, give him some reps because he's not getting any in practice and are essentially treating
who's
the fourth quarter
for that?
Of an NFL game like it's a Wednesday practice session where you want to get some guys some work with your first team offense. So one, I want to know whose decision that was. Number two, what did you think of the offense when Geno came in?
Okay. So I maybe think it's Chan Gailey's decision based on the way Todd Bowles talked about it. I mean, that's my read. I mean, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would say maybe that was Chan Gailey's decision. I don't know if he has that authority, but just based on what Bowles said in the press conference, I'm left to wonder. That's all I'll say. In terms of what I thought of the offense, well, I think he threw as many interceptions as Ryan Fitzpatrick did in 3+ quarters, and didn't he fumble the ball too? So, like, maybe if you're saying, did the offense have a spark or did it kick into a different gear, even despite how it went, maybe. But I'm not prepared to say this offense is – substantially different with Geno Smith in the game or Ryan Fitzpatrick in the game. And that doesn't mean that I want to see Bryce Petty play. I'm just saying I am cynical enough or skeptical enough to not expect a grand change if they make a switch. Let's say Ryan Fitzpatrick throws two picks in the first quarter and they, you know, go to Geno. I don't think we're going to see a big difference. Do you?
Well, no, but here's the thing, right? With Geno's arm being noticeably stronger than Fitzpatrick's, you now open up different element of the game.
Robbie Anderson. With
Robbie Anderson, yeah. With Peak, and with Devin Smith coming off the pup list, you now open up a different element of the game. Also, with some of those back shoulder, quick slants, out routes that they love to throw, Geno's arm is going to force more of those balls in. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that because he throws the ball harder, because he can spin it, that ball is more likely to deck in. It's less likely to be intercepted, or if it's placed accurately, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I was saying, right.
I don't think that Geno is going to make the offense better, but I don't know.
Does he make it different?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. And I think that falls into the play calling. Why in the red zone? I think Gailey is overthinking it. I think Gailey is in his own head right now. And I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's like the run doesn't work 1 week in the red zone, so the next week we're going to go to the pass. Then the pass doesn't work in the red zone, so now we're going to try the run. Then we're going to try a gadget play with the stupid little, like, read option flip shovel pass. Then this week the Cardinals are mightily struggling against the run, and yet you don't use Bilal Powell at all, really. He got
carries so
last night. And the in the red zone where they're struggling, they try to go to the air and they end up having to settle for a field goal.
It's bewildering, and right, it's like a whole different team, and what's changed since last year, and it's hard to put a finger on it. But
that's the most frustrating part. The most frustrating part. All right, let's move on to the next question.
Hi, John Hughes, Long Island, New York. My question is, what can the Jets do right now to just fix the defense, because it just seemed like there was no way the Jets could stop, couldn't stop anything right during the game.
Is John Hughes the writer still alive, or director? Is he still alive?
I'm wondering,
is this the Breakfast Club John Hughes?
No, because isn't he from Baltimore?
I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't mean that he can't be a Jet.
I thought he was still alive. I think he's dead. Oh, he died. He did. Sorry. Anyway, it's not him, and he's not calling from the grave. But hello, John. Good question. And we've not talked about the defense at all. So, yeah, let's talk about the defense. Corey, you saw the whole game. Talk to me.
That's what changed. You know, we just literally said, what changed? That's what's changed. The secondary is abysmal. It is so bad. Okay? It's so bad.
Antonio Cromartie has made this. And basically, and, you know, Darrell Revis, you know, whatever, entering the atmosphere at too steep an angle and, you know, burning up
He's also finally admitted that he's not healthy.
Which
finally happened. I mean, he's got the groin. He says the wrist isn't the same. That came out last night during the Monday night game. The secondary is washed. Marcus Gilchrist has reverted, and I think part of that is due to the fact that Darrell Revis and the rest of the cornerbacks can't be counted on to play press man coverage, which then forces the safeties into roles that they're not necessarily comfortable in. Last year, we thought it was a unit of five or six really good players, where I think it might have been a group that played off each other really well and worked well within the scheme. And Darrell Revis kind of elevated them and allowed them to do some different things the first, 10 or 12 weeks of the season. The other problem is there's no pass rush. Muhammad Wilkerson is a $25 million liability on the defensive line right now. And that's not to say that he's not a good player, but he's not playing like his contract, and he's not playing like he played the last 2 years. Sheldon Richardson is their second best defensive player behind Leonard Williams, and he's being forced to play at linebacker because Casey Rogers is killing me. And my question for you is, is it time to fire Casey Rogers?
Well, you know that's never going to happen. I mean, it's going to take a long time for that to happen, because that's Todd Bowles' guy. I mean, if he basically fires Casey Rogers, he's firing himself. He's essentially firing himself is what he's doing. I don't think he's going down with the Casey Rogers ship. I'm just saying I think he gets more air coverage than you think he'll get. And I think it's personnel. That's going to be the determination when this season shakes out.
You know what the other problem is? is the problem is that their three starting linebackers, when they're healthy, are essentially all rookies. The two rookies in Lorenzo Malden. Darren Lee, although I love his speed, I really like what he brings to this. He flashes at times. He's incredibly inconsistent, and he's basically being asked to quarterback this defense as a rookie, and he's not there. Yeah. He's getting blown up. I mean, we saw a couple plays the last few weeks where teams are essentially running pick routes on him on screen plays and crossing plays.
And he missed David Harris last night, man.
They missed David Harris a lot. Jordan Jenkins has not been the impact player some thought he would after preseason and training camp. Lorenzo Malden, we've touched on many times this season. Aaron Henderson, as I think Joe Caparoso put it last night, has gone full DeMario Davis. And now they're being forced to play guys like Bruce Carter in key roles because of injuries and unreliability to some of the young players. So when your linebackers are a problem and your defensive line is not getting to the quarterback and your cornerbacks can't cover and press man, which is all Todd Bowles asks of his corners, you're basically asking three players to carry an entire defense at every level of the field.
Let's move on
to our last question.
The Jets have all the pieces, so I got to say that the emphasis here is all about coaching or lack of. The coaching is miserable. The secondary doesn't know what they're doing. They're running around. They don't even know who they're running after. And they've got no running game, no passing game, and they're just a complete disaster. That's my take, not to mention all the penalties.
Hey, look, I've talked a lot in this show, and I think this is more about – this question is more of an overall question than a last night question. So I'm going to ask you this.
Okay.
If you look at the coaching staff, it is the same as last year. Save for special teams.
Yeah.
Right. Save for special teams. It's the only difference is special teams. And special teams actually has been much better. That being said, it's not hard
great,
to go from,
but better.
It's not hard to go from abysmal to decent.
to not abysmal. Right.
But the defense has clearly regressed. The offense has clearly regressed. The play calling has been in question on both sides. The player usage and player development has been in question on both sides. Is this an issue of guys suddenly becoming overwhelmed in their roles? Is this a question of Casey Rogers being bad at his job? Is Todd Bowles giving Casey Rogers more control? Is Gailey in his head? I don't know what to think about the staff that last year we looked at and was like, oh, this is one of the best upcoming young staffs in the league. They have a lot of guys that everyone likes. We like Todd Bowles as a leader. Chan Gailey is an innovative offensive mind. And now this year it's what the hell, everyone is wrong.
Well, I think you've said this to me in the past, and I think it holds true here, which is like sometimes you're trying to make something at home, you're trying to cook something or, you know, whatever, take it to whatever field you want. But you're making something and you make it, you don't really have a plan, you don't have a recipe or whatever. You're just kind of putting stuff together and bam, you just make this amazing meal that people will talk about, you know, for years. And, oh, do you remember when you made that thing? And you're like, I have no idea what I did. I just did stuff and it was great. And I've tried to recreate that thing multiple times since, and it just didn't turn out that way. And sometimes you had too much of this and that, too much of that, or not enough of the other. It's kind of like the same thing here. If you look at this like a recipe, like you've got the coaching, you've got the personnel, you've got some luck, you know, that we had last year in terms of, you know, catching Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker on, you know, very healthy years, and Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of getting lofted into the starting position at the perfect time, and you're just playing out of his mind, playing for a contract. And so now all those things have changed. The proportions or whatever of some of those things have changed. Some of the pieces are gone, as Calvin Pace, Antonio Cromartie, Willie Colon, are these guys that meant more to the team than we really thought or understood. And so now it's a whole different animal. Right. And so it's like, it feels like Eric Mangini 2006 versus Eric Mangini 2007. And, you know, now we're kind of in this tailspin, and what are we doing, and how's the team going to go? And nothing seems to be working. And so, I don't know what to say, but I will say, I think better personnel can cure a multitude of sins, and they're going to have to get busy in free agency and kind of clearing space and making room and getting better at drafting, like to some of the points you made there. They got to get better at that, because I don't think a lot's going to change next year. I think Woody is, if he's wise, he'll give it another year, because I think expectations were raised too high last year. And so we went in kind of with too high expectations, and now maybe if you evened out what we had at last year and this year and kind of the first 2 years of a new regime, maybe that would make more sense. But it's kind of, we got the cart in front of the horse kind of a situation. And now we are where we are, where everybody's mad and everybody wants to, you know, pitchforks and torches to the castle.
Well,
I don't think that's the right call.
No. Yeah. So we'll close on that event. We'll dissect that a second and then we'll get out of here. The question now becomes, when you start 1-5, the question becomes, what's left of this year? And what's left of this year is evaluation and honest assessment. And that's of the players and that's of the coaching staff. I honestly, and I don't think anyone is wrong here, Maccagnan is not going anywhere after this year. He's probably not going. He's probably going to get at least another coach, most likely, assuming that Woody Johnson has some modicum of patience. I think Todd Bowles should stay, although I can see him being the fall guy. But I think ousting a staff after 2 years with the limitations that this roster had when he took it over, you know, before free agency last year, I think is unfair. But the question now becomes, what do they do going forward? And I think the important thing is to find out what you have in Sherrone Peak, find out what you have in Robbie Anderson, find out what you have in Devin Smith, find out what you have in Jenkins, Lee, Malden, Simon, Marcus Williams at cornerback. You've got to find out what some of these guys are worth. And maybe against all my thoughts and all of my common sense, that includes playing Bryce Petty. And I have a pretty good idea how that will go, but I don't think that unless this team beats the Raiders, I almost think it's against their better interest. And I've gone back and forth on this because we've had this conversation about winning versus tanking before. You know, the Marcus Mariota draft, we had this conversation, and I think you want to win every week. I get that, but if you're looking at the long term health for this franchise, it might even be better to just say, you know what, this season is about figuring out which of these young players that we've added to this roster in the last 2 to 3 years is worth keeping for the long term, and then spend the offseason getting rid of guys like Marshall, like Richardson, possibly Mangold, not re-signing Clady. You just turn it over to the kids and you move on.
Yeah, I think you got it, right? You just tear off the Band-Aid and let it be what it'll be.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. We will be back later this week to dissect what is could be a very ugly game in MetLife, although I still don't think the Ravens are all that good if we're being 100% honest. But it doesn't take a very good team to beat the Jets these days, so we shall see. Want to thank all you guys for calling in. Want to thank Brian for joining me. You can find him on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And you can find Corey at CoreyGriffinNBC on Twitter.
Make sure you guys find our podcast in our feed, SNY.TV Jets, and also in the SNY TV audio network on your iPhone podcast app or wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And please rate and review those channels as well. We'll be back on Thursday to break down the Ravens game. But until then, try to keep calm and despite your best interests, jet on.
Blah, 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 blah. Blankety, blanky, blank, blank, blank.
Thanks for listening to the Jets Blog Postgame Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.